Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Indeed it does, John. Thank you very much. Live from the NASDAQ market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money, and here's what's on tap tonight. A salty day for the chips. NVIDIA crunched more than 4% ahead of earnings. The rest of the sector also suffering. So is this the start of the thundering herd exiting one of the most crowded trades on the street? We'll debate that one for you. Plus, China rebound. Are things on the mainland so bad they're about to get good? We'll go inside Beijing's push to revive their beaten-down markets. And later, a collection of collectors. How a VC heavyweight and a veteran TV producer are trying to juice the memorabilia market. They will join us to explain how this nearly half a trillion dollar business can double in the next 10 years. In for Melissa Lee, I'm Tyler Matheson. Glad you could be with us tonight. Coming to you live from Studio B at the NASDAQ. On the desk tonight, Dan Nathan, Guy Adami, and Stuart Kiser, head of equity trading and trading strategy at Citi. And we start with a chipwreck on Wall Street. Shares of NVIDIA sinking more than 4% the day before its highly anticipated earnings report. The stock seeing its worst day, by the way, since October. And it wasn't the only semi stock sliding today. There you see some others. Supermicro, AMAT, AMD, and the SMH chip ETF all seeing outsized losses. Still, even with today's drop, NVIDIA is up 40% so far this year. But is this the first sign of the air being let out of the tires of the red-hot semi trade? And could tomorrow's results cause an even bigger pullback? Guy, let's begin with you. This is a company that has just lit the fire on Wall Street for a long, long time. And that's often the case, the kind of situation where if there's a nit to pick in that earnings report, it's going to get picked.
You've lit the fire under investors for a long time, too. Tyler, it's great to have you here. No, you're spot on. You know, it's interesting. The magnitude of the revenue guides higher have slowly been, they've been slowing down, right? They've been getting less and less robust. It's not an indictment. It's just a fact. I mean, a couple quarters ago, they went from $7.8 billion to $11 billion. Obviously, a huge guide. That was last spring, and you saw the subsequent move. The guides are impressive, but not, I don't think, impressive enough. To your point, that was everybody's going to be focused on, I don't think necessarily the quarter, but the guide. And the lead times, apparently, I read over the weekend, are now greatly enhanced. In other words, what was 8 or 9 months are now down to 3 or 4 months. That either means they're getting their act together or maybe demand isn't as robust as everybody seems. We're going to find out tomorrow. But to your earlier point, that was the first crack in the armor for sure.
Yeah, and I guess the problem, Tyler, is that, you know, street estimates for 2024, the year that we're in right now, okay, so this company's reporting their Q4, their fiscal, are expected to be up 70% on earnings and 70% on sales. So the estimates are already really high,
yeah,
right?
It would be high.
Yeah, so to Guy's point about these decelerating beats, right, so you have the situation where the buy is it's just so high, right? And so if there's any slippage, and, you know, every morning I wake up to a new story and Guy's talking about maybe there's a demand issue. We've only heard about tight supply. We keep hearing about their biggest customers. We talked about the customer concentration. It's Microsoft, it's Google, it's Amazon, and it's Meta make up more than 40% of NVIDIA's
sales. Right?
Yeah. So, and every morning I wake up to a new story how Microsoft is trying to diversify away from their dependence on NVIDIA. Sooner or later, that will take a bite. And then there, if there is a demand issue, that's when you actually have a guide lower, not a guide below what estimates are. And so to me, I just think that, listen, I think it sets up as not a great risk reward. I think it would be better if the stock was just raging into the print. You know, it sold off a little bit. I mean, some of the steam coming out of the trade over the last couple days is probably a decent thing. But if you want a meaningful pullback, then you're basically not going to want to go into the print a little bit depressed.
Stuart?
Look, I mean, you know, to your point, the expectations of fundamentals are high, but I would say the positioning is also extremely bullish. This is one of the most widely owned, you know, stocks on the street. If you look at the options market, implied volatility on calls is higher than on puts, and that's over the next 3 months. And that's a highly unusual kind of condition to have, you know, going into an earnings print. So expectations are high. The positioning is there. The implied move on earnings is more than 10%, which, if it happened, would actually move the S&P almost 50 Whoa. Basis points itself. So, you know, I think the bar is quite high going into this print.
What would a stumble by NVIDIA do more broadly to the entire chip sector? Would it just suck them down, a vortex or a black hole or what?
I mean, I think it would have a negative knock on to other stocks in the space. I mean, this is the bellwether. This is the, hey, I don't know how to pick winners and losers in AI, so I'm just going to own the pipes, and that's what NVIDIA is. So I think if you saw real weakness there, yeah, it would definitely spill over.
And then broaden it out to the broader market. Is there a market effect that could come if there's a slip here?
I mean, I think this is one of the largest stocks in the market. Yeah. So, you know, if you're just going to have mathematically speaking, yes, you're going to have downside. And I think from a sentiment perspective, it would be a little bit of a knock on what we've seen. I mean, semis have really been holding up the market the last couple of months. And if you knock that leg out, then, you know, without a doubt, I think it has to spread.
So the SMH, VanEck SMH, we talk about it all the time. Go back. If we can do a longer term chart, you'll see that 160-ish was a huge double top made last July, and it sold off from there. Since then, off to the races. So past resistance becomes support. I think we closed at 195. NVIDIA, to Stuart's point, is 25% of that ETF. Think about that. You had Taiwan Semi, Broadcom, and AMD. That's 50% of the ETF is basically four stocks. So is there a chance? I don't think, listen, you're looking for a place to get into these names. God forbid something bad were to happen. And the level in the SMH is around 160. You can do the math on the individual stocks.
Yeah, and I think, listen, if there was a disappointing guide, you would have all of their customers get hit too, right? Mm-hmm, so the guys who are buying these chips from them or have been buying them and causing these huge upsides. So, like, there will be knock-on effects. Obviously, the semis will be the first. Semi equipment will be the next. And then they're going to start looking at the hyperscalers, all these companies that have been buying all these things. And I'll just make one other point, because you were talking about, like, broadening out. You know, the other mega trend over the last year has been these GLP-1s. And we've seen that, you know, Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk, they've gained, you know, hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in market cap. And they're similar, very concentrated trades, right? And there's a couple winners that have taken a lot of the, you know, the goods in this whole trade. And so I would be worried that if you were to see the semis, you know, fall over the next few weeks or so, you're going to see some of these other very crowded trades that a lot of folks have just kind of
That's
anointed.
That's a really interesting point.
Every so often,
you come up with a good one. But that's really interesting, because they are sort of similar in the market power that they've delivered, in the gains they've delivered, and in the concentration of the.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there haven't been too many other great stories in the stock market over the last, call it, 14 months or so. And obviously AI and you know, a lot of the related stories, and then these GLP-1s. But, you know, aside from that, I know we're going to talk about it in a little bit. I mean, look at how some of these stocks that literally disappointed pretty dramatically just 3 or 4 months ago. This was Walmart was one of them. Had a huge gap. Mm-hmm. And look at this stock gapping to new all-time highs today on the sort of announcement that most of us, back looking back on our careers, wouldn't expect to see a 5 or 6% gap of a stock this sort of size on
a
an
Walmart
announcement
size.
Like that,
a Walmart
size. Like that.
Yeah.
So my point is, we've seen a lot of euphoric behavior in a very short period of time, really since late October.
It's interesting. The Walmart move, Dan's right. I mean, that's a huge move by Walmart standards, but it's probably helped by the rotation out of technology into names like
into
that.
Where retail,
you can, you know what, listen, maybe it's rich a little bit compared to itself, Walmart, but at least you can make a justifiable argument in terms of valuation. And the next question, which you were about to ask.
I was going to ask it.
If things come out of technology, where are they going to go if they come out of big cap pharma and technology? I'm still of the belief that energy is a misunderstood and an industry that is not representative in terms of where the valuation should be. I still think they're way too cheap. You get a rotation out of tech, you get it into energy.
Thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think this goes back to, if you think early in my career, something like Monsanto, right? This is one of those beat and raise stories with this new innovative technology. If it beats and doesn't raise, that stock tends to get hurt. And I think that's the risk you have around, you know, the Lilies of the world and the NVIDIAs of the world. There's just been a series of beat and raises, and that's raised expectations and positioning and kind of creates some risk around those stocks.
So all right, let's pivot a little bit. We'll have more on the chip trade a little bit later in the broadcast. The options actions on NVIDIA ahead of earnings tomorrow. Stuart referenced it a moment ago. Now we move on to Palo Alto Networks. That stock getting crumpled after hours. The company lowering its full year guidance. Shares are now down nearly 20%, 19.18%. That is despite beating on the top and bottom lines. But the estimates, so the forecast, that is, the guidance, not so happy there. Kate Rogers has the details. Kate.
all about that guidance. Tyler, you said it here. Despite a beat on the top and bottom lines, Palo Alto Networks down nearly 20% in this after-hours trade. The company issued weaker-than-expected guidance for both revenue and billings. It's now guiding to full-year total billings between $10.1 and $10.2 billion. That is lower than its previous guidance of $10.7 and $10.8 billion. It also expects full-year revenue to range between $7.95 to $8 billion. That compares to its prior guidance of $8.15 to $8.2 billion. Guidance for the upcoming quarter also fell short of consensus estimates here. Analysts expecting the company to guide to fiscal third-quarter revenue of $2.04 billion, but Palo Alto Networks now expects revenue to range between $1.95 billion and $1.98 billion, so lower there than anticipated. Palo Alto CEO Nikesh Arora will join Jim Cramer on Mad Money tonight, so much more, I am sure, to come. Back over, back over to you guys.
Thanks very much, Kate Rogers. Let's trade Palo Alto, beginning with you.
It's a guide. All right, so basically you have 3 months of gains-ish, 2.5 months, 3 months of gains from early December. I've been wiped out like this in terms of the move we've seen in the last 10 minutes, which we say it all the time, stairs up, elevator down. It's the guide, and when you're trading at 53 times next year's numbers, you better continue to beat and raise, otherwise you're going to get punished. The thing is, we have seen moves of this magnitude before in PANW. Without question, go back and look. We've had a huge run over the last couple months. Again, I don't think you're looking to figure out where to sell this. I think you're trying to figure out where to get back in. And if you go back and look, we took off from about 283, which is probably about $13 from current levels. That's the level you get back in this name.
Yeah, this is not too different of a situation where we were just talking about NVIDIA. So coming into, like, today, you know, expectations were for basically high teens earnings and sales growth for this company. So you disappoint just a little bit.
Yeah, how bad is the guidance?
It didn't look that bad to me, but the stock's down 20%. Just think about that. So the stock is down more than $20 billion in market cap, which is 2x what they're expected to do in billing this year. And I mean, it's important. That math doesn't really matter, but it's just to think about that on a reaction to where expectations were high. You basically come in line. They're not guiding down really that much. But this is on investors, not on the company. I mean, the company came in and they delivered the guidance that they gave 3 months ago. Yeah. So part of it is that we're going to see that investors were just out of whack a little bit over the last few months. They were so convinced what the Fed was going to do. They were so convinced about the strength of this economy, and they piled into the things that they thought would work the best. And so I really think that now that we might be in this narrative higher for longer and may not get nearly as many of the cuts as you expected, I think investors are going to have to rejigger a little bit what they're thinking about what they paid for over the last few months in terms of valuation in the stock market.
Yeah, you know, I think that's exactly right. I mean, the inflation prints the last couple of weeks have forced people to kind of re-engineer their portfolios a bit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for Palo Alto, they picked a bad day to have a bad day, I guess I would also put it. I mean, you know, markets are under a bit of pressure. It's a bit of a weak situation. People are questioning some of the high consensus trades they had coming into the year. So, I mean, look, if the S&P was up 150 bips today, you know, maybe they would have performed better.
But you're constructive on stocks right now, right? Citi is.
Yeah, we are. We're actually quite constructive. We think, you know, the economic backdrop and the earnings backdrop are largely as expected and remain very positive. But the fact is this, the inflation data, you know, CPI, PPI and average hourly earnings have forced people to, I guess, reintroduce themselves to a risk they thought they had left in the past. And when you do that, then you look at your portfolio and maybe the stuff that's outperformed by a bunch or the stuff that maybe has a wart on it or a blemish on it in terms of fundamentals are things you might lighten up on. And it could be that Palo Alto just kind of stepped into that trap, unfortunately.
Well, I wonder, NVIDIA would be another one where you would sort of go, well, God, I've got a triple in this stock. So maybe I want to take a third of my winnings right now. I mean,
yeah, I think that to me, the difference with NVIDIA is I think a lot of people view this as a must own for the AI theme. So my guess would you'd have, you know, pretty good support for that stock, you know, assuming that they didn't, you know, really step in it.
Yeah, this might come as a surprise, though, but there was other cycles, tech cycles in the last 5 or 6 years where NVIDIA was a must own, whether it was crypto mining, whether it was gaming, AR, VR, data. I mean, the list goes on. And this stock has been that it stock to own. It's just this one now, take all of those combined, magnify them by 10 or something like that. Mm-hmm. We just gained at its highs on Friday, $800 billion plus in market cap this year before the company even said anything. Okay, so like my point is like, I've seen this before. Billion. I know how it ends. I don't know if it goes to $2 trillion first and then gets cut in half. It will happen at some point. I mean, like, just take it to the bank. This stock lost 70% from its highs in 2021 because all of those great narratives were wrapped up in one. Investors were really geeked up about all of it. And then it crashed.
Yeah. And it could happen again.
Well, I mean, listen, but this time it's different. I know. I hear it every day on Twitter.
Yeah. All right, let's switch to retail right now. We've talked about Walmart a moment ago, and it's jumping 3%. Home Depot eking out a gain after fourth quarter results that largely beat the street's expectations. Walmart notably getting a boost from cost-conscious shoppers in the holiday quarter. CEO Doug McMillon sat down earlier with Jim Cramer, and here's what he said about the consumer.
People are always looking for value, and so we want to offer that to them across our entire assortment, food, consumables, general merchandise, apparel, everything. And we also want to do it with private brands in addition to brands. And they both matter, and we've done a good job, I think, of keeping our prices in a good range and trying to provide some relief from the inflation that our customers have been experiencing.
You can catch Jim's full interview tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern on Mad Money with Doug McMillon of Walmart. For more on the state of retail, let's bring in former Walmart U.S. CEO Bill Simon. He currently sits on the board of Darden Restaurants and Hanes Brands. Bill, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, good to be with you. How are you?
Let's say you're back at Walmart today, and you're probably doing high fives. It's a pretty good report.
Yeah, you know, really doesn't get a whole lot better than that. Those guys have really done a good job. You know, it's really important. You tell them what you're going to do, and then you actually do it. And then you tell them again, and you do it again. And that's what happens. And I think they've done a good job at that.
Is the economy and the consumer setting up to favor is Walmart in a perfect place for where the consumer is and the economy is today?
Well, the company was built for times like this and the economy like this. They've got a real nice tailwind with food inflation that's been pushing them along for the last couple of years. They're just so able, as Doug mentioned, to deliver on the value proposition that the customer is looking for right now. And, you know, when half of the customer's disposable income is in food and rent, you're really looking for a break somewhere. And Walmart's able to deliver that. And they've been able to do that for a number of years.
What do you make of the Vizio deal? How does it fit?
Yeah, it's kind of a head scratcher for me. You know, Walmart's exactly forever on things that they bought that are not retailers. You know, you kind of got, you know, Bonobos and Voodoo and Jet, and it's sort of hard to figure out what they're doing there, especially with the, you know, the competitive brands that they sell. But, you know, it's hard to second guess them. You know, they've really done a great job repositioning themselves. So they must have a plan. I know they've said they want to do it to try to build their advertising business, but we'll see.
How big a factor going forward will the advertising business be? I wasn't even aware that they were that big in advertising, but evidently they are.
Well, you know, if you look at their business, it's still retail. It's still just a massive retail operation. And you kind of even look back at the last 10 years. Over the last 10 years, they've added $200 billion in top line sales, top line revenue. A lot of that's through third party online, but they've made $1 billion less. Their operating income 10 years ago was $28 billion. And last year, they reported $27 billion. So they're in the process of restructuring from that hardcore brick and mortar asset driven retailer into other areas where they think that they can be competitive in the technology space, and that advertising is important to them for that.
Bill, Target's rallied probably 45% since the low, understanding that the stock is still nowhere near its all-time highs. They report on the 5th of March. Can you draw any conclusions for Target from Walmart?
You know, I like Target. Brian Cornell is a really good retailer and a good leader as well. And so I think they're well positioned. The biggest difference between Walmart and Target is their food mix. I mean, Target doesn't have the grocery business that Walmart has. And so they don't have the inflationary tailwind pushing customers into their store. They're more general merchandise and apparel and fashion. Those categories have been struggling. But that's going to turn around. You know, the inflationary headwinds are easing. You know, so the push that Walmart's getting is going to abate, and people eventually got to buy clothes, right? And they've been reluctant to do that because of lack of a disposable income. So I think the tide's going to turn for Target, maybe not this quarter, but I think coming up.
Hey, Bill, you just mentioned that the Vizio deal is a bit of a head scratcher. You know, we've long opined on this desk when we looked at Amazon, what they've been able to do in advertising, and you just associated the Vizio deal with advertising. It's been an absolute monster. And to me, it would make more sense to look at a much bigger deal like a Pinterest or something like that. If you really want to get into the digital ad space and you're doing $500 billion in sales a year and you have $500 billion market cap, it seems like stop messing around with some of these smaller deals and really get in there and go after it. I'm just curious how you think about that, because you mentioned the Jet deal, which a lot of folks said didn't really work, but it did kind of re-center their focus on digital sales when they made that deal.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to second guess those guys. They've done a really good job with pretty much everything they've touched recently. So while I might scratch my head, maybe that's why I'm at home and they're still working.
All right, Bill, thanks very much. We appreciate your time tonight. Thank you.
All right, you bet you.
All right, let's trade Walmart. Stu, why don't you take a whack at this one?
Yeah, look, I think I'd read it positive, but I would say that these retailers, Walmart and Target in particular, early on in the sort of inflation cycle, they were canaries in the coal mine for input cost inflation. I think now they're a little bit of a canary in the coal mine in terms of consumers' ability to spend, right? So you could look at this print one of two ways. Either consumer spending remains strong or consumers are being forced to trade down. I'm going to kind of decide to focus on the positive of those two things. But, you know, and from our perspective, one of the key reasons we're positive on equity markets is the labor market remains strong. Wages are pretty solid and consumer and services spending are holding in. So if you're in my seat, you're going to read this report positively as a positive sign. But I could definitely understand some people taking a step back and saying, wait a second, is this evidence that people are being forced to trade down a little bit?
All right. We're going to take a break here. Coming up, we've got more earnings alerts for you. Shares of Toll Brothers, Caesars and more on the move after reporting this afternoon. The details and the numbers straight ahead. Plus, a check on China as stocks continue their winning streak. So is the country's recovery finally starting to materialize? We'll debate that when Fast Money returns.
You're watching Fast Money here on CNBC. We'll be right back.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money, everybody. We got an earnings alert on Toll Brothers, a beat on the top and bottom lines for that big home builder. Stock up almost 3% after hours, 2.85%. Diana Olick has the details. Hi, Di.
Hey, Ty. Yeah, Toll is still benefiting from the lack of existing home supply and the fact that it is a luxury builder, and its buyers aren't as affected by small changes in mortgage rates as the broader market. Now, Toll delivered 1,927 homes at an average price of about $1 million. Net contracts up 40% in units and 42% in dollars compared to last year's first quarter. CEO Doug Yearley said they saw solid demand in Q1, which ended January 31st. And then he said, since mid-January, we have seen a marked increase in demand coinciding with the start of the spring selling season. Adjusted gross margin in the quarter was 28.9%, a 140 basis point increase year over year. They estimate Q2 deliveries of between 2,400 and 2,500 units, and they raised full year delivery guidance to between 10,000 and 10,500. Now, builders are pulling back on incentives. Analyst Ivy Zelman was just on in the last hour saying, what we're seeing is the market accelerating into the spring. She said there might even be a pullback in buying down mortgage rates. And that's how the builders did so well last year as rates were rising, Ty.
All right, Diana, thanks very much. And we've got some breaking news now on a new entrant to the Dow Industrials. Doesn't happen all that often. Let's go to Kate Rooney for the details. Kate.
Hey, Tyler, we have two new Dow components. The first one is Amazon. Amazon is replacing Walgreens Boots Alliance. as a Dow constituent. We've also got Uber. Uber is also joining the Dow, replacing JetBlue Airways, officially two new members of the Dow. You got Amazon and Uber replacing, again, JetBlue and Walgreens. But big news, as you said, we don't see that every day, Ty. Back to you.
A new Dow transport, Uber and in for JetBlue among the transports, not the Dow 30. But the Amazon story is the Dow 30, right? The Dow Industrials.
Yes, Dow Industrials. You're right. Dow Transports here is Uber. Exactly. So let's see here. Yep, that is correct. And then it says, reflecting the evolving nature of the American economy. So a big story here, obviously, Amazon reflecting some of the consumer retail exposure and other areas. Obviously, the AI story has been big. They are, you know, the AWS story really has been the growth engine for Amazon. So also reflecting sort of the changing American economy, as Amazon is reflecting that's boom in e-commerce and AI as well.
Kate, thank you very much. Gentlemen, does it matter? Does it matter?
So in 1999, to reflect the change in the economy, Microsoft was added to the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And then in February 2008, to reflect the change in the economy here in the U.S., Bank of America was added to the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
A little bit behind, are you saying?
No, I'm just saying maybe it's a great timing tool.
Maybe it's a timing tool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for our crack staff back in EC, and they are a crack staff, can pull up an IYT chart, understanding this is obviously an ETF, but look at the potential for a double top here in the IYT. Go back a couple of years, see where we're trading at now. Look at the move that Uber's just had. It's a $160 billion company. And you say to yourself, you know, they say nobody rings a bell at the top. Well, that actually might be a little ting, ting, ting of a bell towards the top here. So just bookmark today and this Uber news and the IYT. I think it's interesting.
Our producer, Sandy Cantle, just pointed out that in 2022, what was it you said? Amazon split 20 for one? So sort of set the table.
You're looking at me. Sandy's talking to you, and you're looking at me. I don't know what to tell you. Let's get Sandy in my ear, and I'll answer the question. I mean, anything's possible.
Throw me a life preserver, will you? Man? Does it matter if a stock is – do more people buy a stock because it's in the Dow or not?
I mean, it's not a benchmark that we widely track.
Yeah.
It gets a lot of attention, I think, particularly from retail investors, so I'm sure people will focus on it. I don't think Amazon is going to be a stock that people haven't heard of or don't own already, right? I mean, this is a stock that's pretty widely owned.
So the question would be, like, do indexers have to buy it because it's in the Dow now?
And I would say that it's probably the index funds pegged to the Dow.
Yeah, that's
right. Much more SP.
That's right.
Much more S&P 500. Okay, well, thanks for helping me there.
We're trying.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, we're breaking, like, what do they call it, the fourth wall? Like, somebody's talking to you in your ear, you're bringing it up on
TV.
Well,
your point is a good one. Okay, so 20 to 1, the stock's trading at $167. It is a price-weighted index.
It's a price-weighted index.
They wouldn't put, that's why Berkshire is not in there, right?
And, you know, at $2,000 stocks, yeah. I mean, that would wag the dog,
would
as
do
the
that.
Saying goes. All right, there's a lot more fast money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
The China trade heats up as stocks overseas notch a sixth day of gains. So can the winning streak continue? Or is this overseas opportunity getting overbought? Plus, what's in your wallet? A credit card mega merger. Capital One scooping up Discover Financial in a $35 billion deal. But will regulators charge into the acquisition? We'll debate. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome back to Fast Money, everybody. Stocks in China rising for the sixth straight session after the country cuts its prime lending rate by a quarter of a point. The CSI 300 now up nearly 10% since hitting a five-year low earlier this month. The bigger-than-expected cut, the largest move ever for the rate. It was introduced in 2019. And it comes just days after China's central bank held interest rates steady as lenders look to stabilize the country's sinking market. So how do you look at this recent move higher, Stu?
It looks like a little bit of desperation, I would say, on policymakers' part. This is the most negative I've seen institutional investors towards China in my entire career. And, tactically, people are worried that they're not allowing selling. So maybe all the selling hasn't been done. Medium term, you have GDP and lending and credit challenges. And long term, you have, population shrinkage and diversifying a supply chain. So it's just really hard right now, I think, for investors to find anything other than a short term tactical trade to kind of hang their hat on.
Is it investable at all for an American individual investor?
If you have a high enough risk tolerance, I mean, anything's investable. I mean, the VIX is 100 vol assets. Yes, I guess it is investable. I would say the most common conversations we've had with investors, though, is where else in Asia to put your equity risk on, whether that's Korea, whether that's Japan, because I think people are just not confident to catch any sort of falling knife. They've been burned multiple times in the last year trying to time, the rally. And I think see these sort of medium and structural challenges that just make them really uncomfortable being in there. Plus, I don't think they really trust local policymakers to look out for their interests either. So,
nor should they, I suppose, right? I mean, when you have a government-controlled market
they
like that.
They shouldn't trust them at all. But is it tradable? That's the next question. I mean, investable? Definitely not. But tradable has been the question we've asked on this desk for a few years. And I think throw off an FXI chart, which I think closed at 22 and change. I mean, that 21 level was a line in the sand. Go back to the financial crisis, go back to October 2022, and then go back to the recent low a couple of weeks ago. And I think you have a pretty tradable bottom here against that 21 level. If you don't like the FXI, Alibaba against 68.5, 69, I think that closed at 73 and change today. They reported earnings a few weeks ago. I think you can trade it from the long side. I think you understand your risk, and I think it outweighs the reward right now outweighs those risks.
Very interesting thought.
Yeah, I guess with the FXI, too, is like, okay, Alibaba's 9% of that. Tencent is in there. There's a couple large banks. Again, the government has done a job on a lot of the tech companies already. They're going to support the banks, a lot of the easing. So, I mean, I think to Guy's point, the FXI is probably a decent way to play. You know where your stop is. Just stop it out at those levels. It's probably just below 21-ish or so, and you're buying it here at 23, and you just keep raising the stop. Yeah. But I think the guy's point, it's tradable. We get kind of filleted a little bit every once in a while when you use that term uninvestable, Tyler, but trade it.
Trade it. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Easy.
Sound, what was that?
Easy for you to say. All right. Coming up, we're charging into the big credit card merger making headlines today. Capital One inking a deal to acquire Discover Financial. But would a deal actually be a benefit to consumers? We'll break that one down. And could that old baseball card collecting dust in your childhood closet be worth more than you realize? There's a new venture that can help collectors cash in. The people behind that site ahead when Fast Money returns in two.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks kicking off this shortened trading week in the red, though closing well off the lows of the day. The Dow dropping 64 points, notching its first back-to-back daily losses in nearly a month. The S&P down more than 0.5%, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ, as we always like to point out, down nearly a full percentage point. And just crossing in the last few minutes, Amazon will replace Walgreens Boots Alliance in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. That becomes effective February 26th. Uber also being added now to the Dow Transports. That will replace the beleaguered JetBlue Airways at $7 a share. Meanwhile, Capital One announcing plans to acquire Discover Financial in an all-stock deal worth about $35 billion. Discover rising more than 12%, posting its highest close in nearly 2 years, while COF pulled back on the news. So will it pay to Discover, or could regulators block this deal? Our Kate Rooney joins us now with the latest. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Tyler. Yeah, so this deal combines two of the biggest companies in the credit card space, and it is expected to see some regulatory pushback. Discover and Capital One are positioning this as a way to create more competition in the payment space with a stronger alternative to Visa and MasterCard. Discover is a bank, much like Capital One, but it also runs a card network. And that has been in a distant fourth place behind Visa, MasterCard, and American Express. It has struggled to get other banks to run on its payment rails. Capital One saying that it's going to move some of its card volume onto Discover to help grow that network. As BTIG put it in a note this morning, the deal could face gale force headwinds from a Washington that is already deeply skeptical of consolidation. However, there are some in Washington who, as he put it, are wary of Visa and MasterCard's duopoly. his words, which suggests that bolstering a competitor, rather, would be viewed positively. You've already heard Senator Elizabeth Warren chiming in on social media saying that regulators must block the deal immediately. Still, the efficiencies and scale that this deal might achieve does make it worth it for Capital One to fight those potential legal battles. Executives expect to add 25 million cardholders here, $175 billion in purchase volume in the next couple of years, and $1.3 billion in cost savings. Tyler, back over to you.
All right, Kate, thank you very much. Gentlemen, any thoughts here on Discover and this deal with Capital One?
Well, go ahead, Stu. No, because I'm going to read this tweet. Go ahead.
I think, you know, from my perspective, if you're able to get a relatively large M&A deal pushed through in the financial space, I think you'd probably view that relatively positive, you know, for the market, because that's just been such a challenge lately to get that done. No view on this specific deal, but just in the industry, being able to get a relatively large deal through, you saw, you know, Elizabeth Warren's comments there already pushing back hard on it. So I think that would be a positive. I think in the bank space at large, people have viewed, you know, a potential Trump presidency and the deregulation that might go along with that and the potential for more M&A is pretty positive. Not that these things are necessarily related, but it kind of plays into a market narrative that's out there right now.
I don't pretend to understand antitrust law at all here, but there is a sort of interesting argument that, well, if this helps a third or a fourth player get stronger, right, in a business that is dominated by two players, isn't that helpful to competition?
Should help competition and lower prices, which flies in the face of Elizabeth Warren, who said today at 1:14, the merger of Capital One Discover threatens our financial stability. That's pretty, hyperbolic. Reduces competition, would increase fees and credit costs for American families. I mean, you can make that argument as well. Personally, I don't see how this goes through, given the headwinds you're going to have just on Capitol Hill. So in our world, there's something called risk arbitrage. And, you know, there's probably a play here for people with temerity to play Discover from the short side, because I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Also, this is almost on the anniversary of the banking crisis that we had last year, where we lost a handful of some regional banks. And you know, Discover and Capital One were kind of right in the mix, at least of the names that were being punished at the time relative to the large money center banks. So it's just interesting how quickly the narratives can change. And I think I'm with Stu here, too. It's like, listen, these guys knew what the regulatory headwinds were going to be going into it. I think maybe it's a bit of a bet. Both of them arrived at a fact. I don't know what the breakup fee and what the disruption to the business is and everything like that. But the bet is that there's a different administration that is going to be a bit more, amenable, open to these sorts of deals, and therefore you might as well get it on the tape now and see what happens.
What's in your wallet? A Discover card, we'll find out. All right, coming up, Return of the Collectors. Take a look at what may be the most widely recognized baseball card in history. That is the highly prized 1952 Mickey Mantle. That would be L-E, not E-L card. Mantle. Want to place a bid on it? Our next guests are launching a platform that could bring together big collectors. That is next. And NVIDIA earnings on deck for tomorrow, but analysts warning of downside pain. We're going to take a look at a strategy that leaves you winning. Fast Money will be back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money, everybody. A home for collectors. That's what our next guests are hoping to build for what they say is just the beginning of a booming business in memorabilia. They say the market is set to hit a valuation of $1 trillion by 2033. That's more than a doubling from here. Wheelhouse CEO Brent Montgomery and 776 CEO and Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian join us now. Welcome to both of you. Alexis, let me start with you. What is your passion about collectibles, and what are you attempting to do here? Build a marketplace or a community or both?
First and foremost, a community. And you don't have to look too far in my background to see just how much I love collectibles. I have since I was a kid, and it's been a hobby that I rediscovered about 6 or 7 years ago when a buddy of mine said it was starting to come back. And I went deep. Video games, cards. I mean, we got a whole office full of this stuff. And the first thing I did naturally was go online to, you know, social media websites, hit the search. And what I found were so many disparate communities online of collectors, but no one place that was intentionally designed for them to come together, whether they love trading cards or other collectibles. And so we've got a chance now to build it with Mantle.
So, Brent, this could be trading cards. You've brought some collectibles. I'm going to ask you to walk us through it in just a moment. This could be trading cards. It could be Pez machines, dispensers. It could be the whole gamut of collectibles. This is creating a community. Again, I want to come back. Is it also a marketplace, a place where you can trade, buy and sell, or what?
No, there's plenty of places for that right now. So we wanted to create a spot where both collectors, investors could go that really focused on giving the best user-generated content, which is Alexis's forte, and then myself, more of a video guy, a storyteller, Pawn Stars, King of Collectibles, and some other shows that have been around collectibles. And really, to your other point, it's starting with sports cards first. It's been a lot of fun to work with Alexis and iterate a little bit in one vertical, and then we'll expand it to Pez dispensers, Beanie Babies, music, and so on.
So. There's this fantasy, I think, that I'm going to find in my shoebox or in my attic the card, and you take us through a couple of cards, the card that is going to make me a billionaire. And does that happen, or do you have to really be a serious collector to make money in this area?
When we launched Pawn Stars in 2009, it was during a bad economy. People were going to their attics, their garages to dig out stuff. And yes, it does happen. We did a show with a guy where he found a $3 picture at a five and dime store. It turned out to be the second ever picture known of Billy the Kid, sold for, I think, north of $5 million. So it does happen.
Alexis, I want to come back to you in just a minute, but Brent, I want you to show us a couple of the things you brought that are highly prized. Why don't you start with the Beatles record, that single?
So this is Love Me Do, which Paul McCartney said was the song that really took the Beatles from starting to do well to going over the top. And of course, their monumental Ed Sullivan show not long after that. And that one, this record here goes for about
$32,000. $32,000. And that is a single. That's called, for my son, that's called a 45, right?
Well, is it really?
It is a 45.
And for our daughters and some of our sons, I think you see now with Taylor Swift, which her stuff's moving about double of what it was last year, fewer records are being produced, physical, fewer CDs. And so the actual value of these, getting them signed, is more than it would have been historically.
So show us the Mickey Mantle. That's L-E, not E-L, like the name of your new platform, but L-E, Mickey Mantle card. What's that one?
Yeah, we named the platform Mantle, like where you put your favorite stuff, right? The fact that maybe subconsciously it was an ode to Mickey Mantle as well. So this is probably the most famous sports card there is, and it's funny why it's so valuable. You know the story, Dan?
No, I'm just nodding because I'm enjoying it. It's amazing.
Basically, Topps, which produced this card, decided that their next run was going to be more valuable, so they dumped thousands of sets of 1952 Topps into the ocean to make room in their warehouse. So the limited scarcity is what drove the value of this specific card.
Alexis, really quickly, you invest in private companies. You've obviously been collecting a lot of these really cool things. What is it about investing that you've learned that's kind of drawn you to this market?
You know, I'm an early stage investor, and I've been very fortunate to have been, you know, one of the first checks in companies like Coinbase, Instacart, Row, amazing companies. And I think the one skill I have in life is identifying opportunities early, usually about 10 years before the rest of the world does. Obviously, creating Reddit. But even in this, and what we saw during COVID was obviously a big explosion of people finding this, sort of tapping into this nostalgia again. But I'll tell you, look, some of this is in a way financial. I do now have for sure the largest collection of Serena Williams rookie cards because, you know, 6 years ago I get back into the hobby and I realized, well, if I'm married to Picasso, I want to make sure all of our, you know, great grandkids get to have the full collection. So like, this is a very valuable card. This is probably definitely her most valuable card. But I also have like the first video game I ever bought and it's a sealed copy. No one in the world would want this game other than me because it reminds me of a whole world that opened up to me thanks to video games, which got me into programming, which got me into Reddit and everything else. And so this can mean different things to different people. It can be purely sentimental. It can be, you know, a long-term investment that you'll never sell. But what's so fun is, I think for a whole generation of us, we get to tap back into something from our youth that just brings us joy, like any other piece of culture or art would.
It's people love collectibles. They just love them. Right.
Well, it takes you back to you were at a game with your father. You know, you went to a concert with your mom. And to be able to have the ticket stub or something that was signed at event, it's just so much different than a typical investor.
Brent, thank you very much. Alexis, thank you. More Fast in 2. All right, let's get one more check on the new movers in the Dow indexes or moves into the Dow. Amazon is set to replace Walgreens in the industrial average, the change prompted by Walmart's decision to split 3-1 announced late last month. That reduced the retail giant's weight in the index, and Walmart will remain in the Dow, by the way. The change will go into effect 1 week from today on February 26th. That's Amazon in Walgreens boots, booted. Up next, your final trades. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn in 25 seconds or less. Stu, what do you say?
We like S&P 500 equal weight. You know, 4Q earnings showed solid earnings that are also broadening out, so we are going to stay with that theme.
Dan, what do you say?
FXI.
FXI. Big guy.
Stud, you. Coca-Cola, KO.
KO. Thanks for watching Fast Money. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
I know how to run a hair salon, but for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. She's a small business owner too, so she knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.